Welcome to the Wealth Matters Podcast, where investors come together to better understand how to build passive cash flow and create generational wealth without all the confusing mumbo-jumbo. Here's your host and co-author of Amazon number one bestseller, Alpesh Pamar.
Welcome to Wealth Matters Podcast. Hope all of you are doing great today. I have Mr. Dan Thompson, who is a seasoned financial advisor and business owner with almost four decades of experience. And funny, he started his career as a stockbroker in 1986. But after witnessing the 2001 stock market crash, he realized the need for safer and more predictable investment strategies. Dan values tax advantages, access to capital, and controlling the flow of money, and is dedicated to helping clients find strategies that fit their needs. So welcome, Dan.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here. This should be fun. I love talking to guys like you who really want to help people build their wealth. It's awesome.
Oh, thank you, Dan. So, and this is going to be an interesting topic because we want to talk about tax credits today. But before we get started, I asked some of these questions to all my guests. And one of that is, tell us something interesting about yourself.
Well, maybe, I don't know how interesting it is, but I'm a competitive water skier.
Oh, so, wow.
I try to do that, get out and compete and get on the water ski course a few times a week during the summer.
Oh, that's great. So let's talk about the investment side, because of course you have been a stockbroker. What was your first investment and how did it work out for you?
That's a great question. Yeah, so it's 1986. I'm about as broke as you can be. I wanted just a quick little background. When I was 15 years old, I was sitting in the car with my dad and this friend of his who just was rich. And my dad was not rich, but this guy said he made $30,000 that month in the stock market.
That time. That's
yeah.
A lot of money.
This would have been like 75, you know?
Whoa. That's what people would make in a year if they came.
Exactly. And I was making $2.50 an hour moving dirt, landscaping houses. And I quickly said that would take me 6 years just to get anywhere close. And he did it in 30 days. So literally I was 15 years old and I just said, that's it. Somehow, some way I got to be a stockbroker. Well, I didn't come from money. My family didn't have money. My dad worked hard, but never could get ahead. So I just went around begging these stock brokerage firms to hire me. And finally, one said, all right, we'll give you a series of five tests. And if you pass them, we'll give you a shot. Luckily, I passed them. They gave me a shot. And my very first investment, if you will, was a mutual fund put out by Fidelity. It was called Fidelity Magellan. It's still around today, I think.
Oh wow.
And okay. I could finally afford to put $25 a month in it.
That's crazy. That's good. But it got you started. It showed you the power of investment, even if it's stock market. What kind of assets do you invest in now?
So after the dot-com boom and bust, I realized, gosh, we got to do something different a little bit, because I can't have clients make money. And then just before they retire, lose 20, 30, 40.
Everything's gone.
So I just kind of went on a quest for a year or two. And what I found to be the best for me and for a lot of our clients, this sounds a little weird, but we pack life insurance policies with cash. And then we use those life insurance policies for other assets. So what I did early on, I started investing in a builder, a home builder. And so he would pay me a good return. I would use my policy, loan money to him. He'd build houses. And then he turned around and said, Dan, why am I doing this for you? You could do this for yourself. So we started a home building company. And so last year, well, I should say 2022, we did about 50 million in new homes, all from life insurance.
Wow. Wow. That's crazy.
But then that's great. But unfortunately, when you're building houses, it's just ordinary income. You know, you build a house, you make. So over the years, we've looked for ways to how do I protect ordinary income? Yeah. And so that's taken us into multifamily, commercial property, anything that has some depreciation and some tax advantages. It's got us into conservation easements, carbon credits, equipment leasing, different things that where we can pack those policies full of cash, then use a line of credit to go invest into those. Now we double dip. So we've got money working in the policy and in the investment. We get some additional tax advantages. And then if we do this right, or we get really close to offsetting all our income with tax advantages.
Oh, that's amazing. And my listeners do know about the high cash value life insurance policies, the whole life insurance, et cetera. I personally have it as well. So I know how it totally works. And we will get to the tax credits especially. But tell me, what inspired you to become a financial advisor in the first place?
Yeah, I think it goes back to that first thing I was telling you about when I was 15. I just realized that. So I knew when... both my parents are deceased, so hopefully they're not listening to this. But I mean, they worked hard, loved them, great family, great system, but they were just broke all the time. And I knew when we were on welfare and, you know, the food just wasn't as good.
Right.
So I just, something clicked in me when I was like 15, 16 years old. Well, first of all, my parents could never buy me anything. If I wanted a pair of pants or a new shirt or skis or whatever I wanted, I had to figure out a way to get it. So it clicked on me really early that I've got to want to manage money. I want to make money. And the best way to do it is become the stockbroker. And then I'll be this expert who will know everything. And I'll just make $1 jillion buying stocks. Live happily ever after. So the inspiration came really from not wanting to live paycheck to paycheck like I watched my parents struggle for so many years.
Got it. No, that makes sense. So, and you explained nuances of tax credits, but what are tax credits just for my listeners?
So tax credits come in various forms. Some are direct, like for instance, conservation easements, which by the way, we don't have to talk a lot about because Congress wiped them out
now
this year.
Scrutinized, yeah, heavily scrutinized.
But they were great. You could put in, you know, for every dollar you put in, you'd get 4 or 5 times the tax deduction. So for years, you know, clients would put in, let's just say $100,000 and get a $400,000 or $500,000 tax deduction. But unfortunately, those are gone right now. Maybe they'll come back. So that's one way. You also can get some tax credits through low-income housing. You can invest in those and get some tax credits there. I think the easiest one to understand and what most people can get involved in is just pure depreciation from real estate. Or in equipment leasing, you have this thing called a 179 deduction.
Yes.
Those are probably the two easiest ones to get involved in. And can offset a lot of taxes.
That's awesome. Yeah, and we have spoken about depreciation a lot because we invest as a group in mobile home parks to senior housing facilities and self-storage. So we try to depreciate 60 to 80% in the first year itself, right? And of course, we do understand the Section 179 because, you know, you can buy a truck, you know, which is over 5,000 pounds or 6,000 pounds, I think, and you can write it off, right? So, but I wanted to figure out what else is out there. Of course, we mentioned the conservative easements. We also know about investing in oil and gas, depreciation, Section 179. What are the carbon credits, which I keep hearing about a lot? And we'll also talk about solar credits as well.
So those are a little unique because you get both the 179 deduction and you get some carbon credit deduction. But essentially, it's at least the programs that we work with have been just a small way of fracking. So fracking is a way to get that last oil and gas out of the ground that the typical traditional wells couldn't get. And not being the expert on how it works, I just know how to invest in it.
Right.
by pushing carbon into the ground, it forces up that last oil and gas. Then they have a patented system to where they split the carbon out again. They can then resell the carbon for some credits, but they also get the income coming off on that last oil and gas on a per barrel basis as they pull that out. And you get the 179 deduction on the equipment itself. So it turns out to be pretty attractive. They go fast. Like right now, we couldn't even get in them right now. We'll probably have to wait till the beginning of next year before they open them up, because they're taken out so quickly. And I hate to say this, but they're taken out. I take out as much as I can. they're kind of the people who are involved with them end up just keep on reinvesting and getting more and more. But that's a great way to not only produce some tax deductions, but also some great income stream as well. But it's just a small order of fracking.
Right. So that is the carbon credits on the oil and gas industry side. But if I understand correctly, there are carbon credits which a lot of big companies like Amazon, Microsoft, and they have to buy to make themselves as carbon neutral.
Correct. That's a different world. And honestly, I don't get in much of that, but you're right. They have to offset their destruction of the world,
right,
if you will.
Yeah.
And by buying carbon credits. And then there's even some crypto coins out there.
Yes.
That trade carbon credits. But I'm not sure how that gives us much tax advantage. It might be a great income stream or a growth. I haven't dealt much in that world.
Yeah.
What about the equipment that actually does it?
Got it. And what about the solar tax credits?
Sure. Those are huge. Mostly that will offset your cost to put the solar in. Now, where you might make some money is being the lender on the solar to get the tax credits, kind of like equipment leasing. For instance, we have an equipment leasing program where we only put in about 25-30% of the capital. Then we use bank financing for the difference, but we get the deduction.
Right.
100%.
Like real estate. Where we put down 20, 30, 35%, and then we get the depreciation for the 100% of the real estate.
Love leverage.
Yeah. Leverage is the key, right? Even if the interest rates are going up, as long as the numbers work, we continue to invest, right?
So I'll give you one other thing that you can do, which we do a ton of this. So we have clients who they're just risk adverse. They don't want to do the research.
Right.
They don't want to do anything. And just, hey, how can I get into double digit returns and just not have any risk?
Right.
Well, what we'll do is we'll leverage life insurance on life insurance on life insurance on life insurance. And we just keep leveraging the premiums over and over. And what you'll typically do is it takes a few years to get those built up, but we can usually get into mid-teen to even low 20% returns, depending on how old the client is, and never leave the world of life insurance. So you've always got the safety and the guarantees of these huge companies, and just leveraging life insurance can be a really good way to go without having to understand everything that goes on in the world. And they're extremely good income producing assets, and all tax free.
Yeah. So that is very interesting. So of course they are income producing, and I understand the tax free means the way it works, at least as per my understanding, is that you can loan the money, right? As long as you don't withdraw money, as long as you don't close the policy, you are good. And then of course, if you pass away, then of course your heirs will get it pretty much tax-free.
Yep, you're exactly right. Yeah, we use leverage, again, our favorite thing. But we'll use outside banks to collateralize the policy, and they'll literally give you a checkbook.
Yes.
So access to your capital just that quick. And what we do is we'll help our clients calculate the spread, and then we know how much they can spend without ever tapping into their principal or going backwards.
So this is that finance life insurance policy, right? Where you put down like 25% or so, and the bank, you know, covers the rest. And then are you turning around and even investing my or leveraging my 25% to finance someone else's policy?
No, we can keep it all within your own sphere and your own world. We do have a fund that buys other people's policies. So oftentimes our clients who have a bunch of cash value will use their policy to invest in this fund that buys other people's policies.
Right.
So again, now they're still in the same world of safety and guarantees, but they own other people's policies.
Oh, that's great. So let's go back to the solar tax credits. And you mentioned about you can leverage there as well. How does that work? And how can an investor invest in carbon credits or solar tax credits?
So it's very similar to equipment leasing. So for instance, the program that we typically use, I call it big, dumb equipment. You know, we want big tractors and things that last for 50 years, and we lease them to, I shouldn't say we, the company that we work with leases them to farmers and ranchers. And so we like that big, dumb equipment. And, but that could be solar. It could be the carbon fracking equipment. It could be anything that qualifies for the deduction or a 179, and you get the same benefits.
Got it. And how can an investor invest in this kind of assets? And what do they get in return? Of course, they get the, the equipment is for solar tax credits. So they get, of course, the income, but they also get the depreciation or deduction?
Yeah, again, looking at because we don't necessarily deal with solar directly, the equipment is probably easier for me to explain. But yeah, you own the equipment. You're leasing it to the farmer, you're getting the 179 deduction, and you're getting the lease income. And you usually get into the mid-teens in terms of a return. And then obviously we encourage people to take that return and take those deductions and get them into life insurance policies, keep their cash building, and then use the policy to go and do it again and just keep on rinsing and repeating over and over.
That makes sense. So what kind of due diligence an investor should perform before investing in carbon credits or solar tax credits?
Well, the unfortunate thing, and this to me just really gets me frustrated, but everybody that gets into most of these programs, they have to be an accredited investor, which really bothers me. Who needs it the most? Who needs it the most? The people
exactly.
Without the money. But yeah, the government only lets the people with money get into these
money,
good.
Yep. I had the same issue back in 2015 when I started investing, because every time I kept hearing accredited investor. So my group, Wealth Matters, we mostly focus on the deals where non-accredited investors can invest. Right.
Yes.
That was my goal. I still have some deals, but I would say 90%+ of my deals have both accredited and sophisticated investors.
Hey, they're just hard to find, right?
I
mean, because it's so much easier for a fund to create a fund with, you know, maybe I think they get like 30 or 35 non-accredited, and then everybody else has to be accredited. So I know one of the things I did for our building company is I started just a lending program. It wasn't a fund. It wasn't anything like that. But if somebody wanted to just get involved in building and just be a lender, then I created a way for them to do that. And then they didn't have to be accredited. And if they wanted to, you know, lend a builder $10,000 or $20,000 or whatever, at least they could get their money working a little bit better.
Got it. So going back to the due diligence, of course, you mentioned about accredited investors, but Even as an accredited investor, what kind of due diligence I should perform?
Oh, you know, and that's the other side to small, you know, I'll call them boutique kind of investments. getting the data that you really would like is not easy sometimes.
Right.
So obviously you want any kind of past performance data. Typically they've got, they'll share with you almost anything, tax returns, balance sheets, P&Ls. Then the unfortunate side of that is you've got to kind of know what you're looking for, right? So you want somebody on your team to help you do that. That's the beauty of, you know, probably how you do your stuff, how we do our stuff. We've got those experts who can look through this stuff and at least give a, it doesn't mean it's going to always work and it doesn't mean it's guaranteed, but at least you got a pretty good handle that it's done well in the past and has a good chance that the future will be the same.
Oh, this is awesome. Thank you so much for sharing a lot of details about tax credits. Are you ready for fire round?
Let's go.
Would you be changing business or investment strategy because of current environment where inflation is still hot, even though the government will keep telling us it's going down, but also recession is here or it's around the corner?
Yes, changing just a little bit. I think the biggest opportunity maybe of my lifetime is going to be multifamily housing in the next few years.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. Yeah, a lot of people just bought without looking at it and now they are struggling. So yeah, it's coming.
And some of those big hedge funds.
Yes.
who they bought these things with the idea that interest rates were always going to be,
right,
you know, 2%, and now they're tripled and the cash flow is not there and they promised investors a return and they can't do it. I think the hedge funds are going to be bailing on thousands of properties.
Right. No, yeah, I can't wait.
We are, exactly. That's how we feel.
Yep. Favorite nonfiction book? It could be self-development, business, investment.
Oh, I got to go back to my very first one, and that was Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Of course.
Still one of my favorite books. Now my favorite book is my own. No, I'm just kidding.
Any tool or website you recommend or you cannot live without?
Oh, I don't think you can live without YouTube these days. I think people have to keep educating themselves. It's free education. It's better than any college out there. Just anything. And it doesn't matter what your interest is. It's there.
So if you are watching us on YouTube, don't forget to hit the subscribe icon.
There you go. And the like.
Yes, and the like button, of course. Any advice for beginner investors?
Yeah, don't wait. Don't wait till you think you've got enough. Man, like I said, I started with $25 a month. In fact, I wrote this in my recent book that you never get back time. I can never get back yesterday. So I want every day, even if it's this much money, compounding and growing for as long as I possibly can. So don't wait, get started, and don't even wait till you pay off all your debt. Just put something away today. I lost you.
Yes, oh, I totally agree. How do you give back?
Wait, one more, sorry.
How do you give back?
Oh, I think I give back because of my YouTube channel. Everything's free. Hand out as much education as we possibly can. We don't hold anything back. We're talking about anything that can help people. Obviously, we're happy to have a strategy session with them, but even just doing it themselves or finding a different direction, I think it's just, I want people to know all this stuff. And so, yeah, I'm giving back all the time through every media channel I can.
That's awesome. How can my listeners reach out to you?
Yeah, it's Wise Money Tools. So whether it's wisemoneytools.com website, the Wise Money Tools YouTube channel, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, all Wise Money Tools or Dan Thompson. And hopefully they can find me pretty easily.
Thank you so much, Dan, for your time today.
You bet. It was great talking to you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Wealth Matters podcast. If you enjoyed it, please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes so others can enjoy the show too. Have a great week and happy investing.